lightsabers flashing pictures of plowed fields and tractors. Against the right wall sat a single bed, a messy desk, and an open wardrobe filled with extra denim clothes and a stack of farm implements, like pitchforks and rakes. The back wall was a huge garage door. Parked next to it was a red and gold chariot, with an open carriage and a single axle, like the chariots Frank had raced at Camp Jupiter. Sprouting from the sides of the driver's box were giant feathery wings. Wrapped around the rim of the left wheel, a spotted python snored loudly. Frank hadn't known that pythons could snore. He hoped he hadn't done that himself in python form last night.
"Set your friend here," said the man in denim.
Frank placed Hazel gently on the bed. He removed her sword and tried to make her comfortable, but she was as limp as a scarecrow. Her complexion definitely had a greenish tint.
"What were those cow things?" Frank demanded. "What did they do to her?"
"Catoblepnies," said their host. "Singular, catobleps. In English, it means downlooker. Called that because..."
"They're always looking down."
Nico smacked his forehead.
"Right. I remember reading about them."
Frank glared at him.
"Now you remember?"
Nico hung his head almost as low as a catobleps.
I used to play this stupid card game when I was younger. Mythomagic. The catobleps was one of the monster cards."
Frank blinked.
"I played Mythomagic. I never saw that card."
"It was in the Africanus Extreme Expansion deck."
"Oh."
Their host cleared his throat. "Are you two done, geeking out, as they say?"
"Right, sorry," Nico muttered. "Anyway, catoblepnies have poison breath and a poison gaze. I thought they only lived in Africa."
The man in denim shrugged. "That's their native land. They were accidentally imported to Venice hundreds of years ago. You've heard of St. Mark?" Frank wanted to scream with frustration. He didn't see how any of this was relevant, but if their host could heal Hazel, Frank decided maybe it would be best not to make him angry.
"Saints? They're not part of Greek mythology."
The man in denim chuckled. "No, but St. Mark is the patron saint of this city. He died in Egypt. Oh, a long time ago. When the Venetians became powerful, well, the relics of saints were a big tourist attraction back in the Middle Ages. The Venetians decided to steal St. Mark's remains and bring them to their big church of San Marco. They smuggled out his body in a barrel of pickled pig parts."
"That's disgusting," Frank said.
"Yes," the man agreed with a smile.
"The point is, you can't do something like that and not have consequences. The Venetians unintentionally smuggled something else out of Egypt, the catoblepnies. They came here aboard that ship and have been breeding like rats ever since. They love the magical poison roots that grow here, swampy, foul-smelling plants that creep up from the canals. It makes their breath even more poisonous. Usually the monsters ignore mortals, but demigods, especially demigods who get in their way..."
"Got it," Frank snapped. "Can you cure her?"
The man shrugged. "Possibly."
"Possibly?"
Frank had to use all his willpower not to throttle the guy. He put his hand under Hazel's nose. He couldn't feel her breath.
"Nico, please tell me she's doing that death trance thing, like you did in the bronze jar."
Nico grimaced.
"I don't know if Hazel can do that. Her dad is technically Pluto, not Hades, so..."
"Hades?"
cried their host. He backed away, staring at Nico with distaste.
"So that's what I smell. Children of the underworld? If I'd known that, I would never have let you in.
Frank rose.
Hazel's a good person. You promised you would help her.
I did not promise.
Nico drew his sword.
She's my sister, he growled.
I don't know who you are, but if you can cure her, you have to. Or so help me by the river Styx.
Oh, blah, blah, blah.
The man waved his hand. Suddenly, where Nico D'Angelo had been standing was a potted plant about 5 feet tall, with drooping green leaves, tufts of silk, and half a dozen ripe yellow ears of corn. There, the man huffed, wagging his finger at the corn plant. Children of Hades can't order me around. You should talk less and listen more. Now, at least you have ears.
Frank stumbled against the bed.
What did you... Why...
The man raised an eyebrow. Frank made a squeaky noise that wasn't very courageous. He'd been so focused on Hazel, he'd forgotten what Leo had told them about the guy they were looking for.
You're a god, he remembered.
Triptolemus. The man bowed. My friends call me Trip, so don't call me that. And if you're another child of Hades...
Mars, Frank said quickly. Child of Mars.
Triptolemus sniffed.
Well, not much better, but perhaps you deserve to be something better than a corn plant.
Sorghum?
Sorghum is very nice.
Wait,
Frank pleaded.
We're here on a friendly mission. We brought a gift.
Very slowly, he reached into his backpack and brought out the leather-bound book.
This belongs to you?
My almanac!
Triptolemus grinned and seized the book. He thumbed through the pages and started bouncing on the balls of his feet.
Oh, this is fabulous! Where did you find it?
Bologna. There were these...
Frank remembered that he wasn't supposed to mention the dwarfs.
Terrible monsters. We risked our lives, but we knew this was important to you. So, could you maybe, you know, turn Nico back to normal and heal Hazel?
Trip looked up from his book. He'd been happily reciting lines to himself. Something about turnip planting schedules. Frank wished that Ella the Harpy were here. She would get along great with this guy.
Oh, heal them?
Triptolemus clucked disapprovingly.
I'm grateful for the book, of course. I can definitely let you go free, son of Mars. But I have a long-standing problem with Hades. After all, I owe my godly powers to Demeter.
Frank racked his brain, but it was hard with the voices screaming in his head and the catableps poison making him dizzy.
Demeter, he said. The plant goddess. She didn't like Hades because...
Suddenly, he recalled an old story he'd heard at Camp Jupiter.
Her daughter, Proserpine.
Persephone, Trip corrected. I prefer the Greek, if you don't mind.
Kill him?
Mars screamed.
I love this guy,
Ares yelled back.
Kill him anyway.
Frank decided not to take offense. He didn't want to get turned into a sorghum plant.
Okay, Hades kidnapped Persephone.
Exactly, Trip said.
So, Persephone was a friend of yours?
Trip snorted. I was just a mortal prince back then. Persephone wouldn't have noticed me. But when her mother, Demeter, went searching for her, scouring the whole earth, not many people would help her. Hecate lit her way at night with her torches. And I... Well, when Demeter came to my part of Greece, I gave her a place to stay. I comforted her, gave her a meal, and offered my assistance. I didn't know she was a goddess at the time, but my good deed paid off. Later, Demeter rewarded me by making me a god of farming.
Wow, Frank said. Farming. Congratulations.
I know. Pretty awesome, right? Anyway, Demeter never got along with Hades, so naturally, you know, I have to side with my patron goddess. Children of Hades? Forget it. In fact, one of them, this Scythian king named Lincus, when I tried to teach his countrymen about farming, he killed my right python.
Your right python?
Trip marched over to his winged chariot and hopped in. He pulled a lever and the wings began to flap. The spotted python on the left wheel opened his eyes. He started to writhe, coiling around the axle like a spring. The chariot whirred into motion, but the right wheel stayed in place, so Triptolemus spun in circles, the chariot beating its wings and bouncing up and down like a defective merry-go-round. You see, he said as he spun, no good. Ever since I lost my right python, I haven't been able to spread the word about farming, at least not in person. Now I have to resort to giving online courses.
What?
As soon as he said it, Frank was sorry he'd asked. Trip hopped off the chariot while it was still spinning. The python slowed to a stop and went back to snoring. Trip jogged over to the line of computers. He tapped the keyboards and the screens woke up, displaying a website in maroon and gold with a picture of a happy farmer in a toga and a John Deere cap, standing with his bronze scythe in a field of wheat. Triptolemus Farming University, he announced proudly. In just 6 weeks, you can get your bachelor's degree in the exciting and vibrant career of the future, farming. Frank felt a bead of sweat trickle down his cheek. He didn't care about this crazy god or his snake-powered chariot or his online degree program. But Hazel was turning greener by the moment. Nico was a corn plant, and he was alone.
Look, he said, we did bring you the almanac, and my friends are really nice. They're not like those other children of Hades you've met. So if there's any way...
Oh, Trip snapped his fingers. I see where you're going.
You do?
Absolutely. If I cure your friend Hazel and return the other one, Nicholas...
Nico.
If I return him to normal...
Frank hesitated.
Yes.
Then in exchange, you stay with me and take up farming. A child of Mars as my apprentice? It's perfect. What a spokesman you'll be. We can beat swords into plowshares and have so much fun.
Actually,
Frank tried frantically to come up with a plan. Ares and Mars screamed in his head.
Swords, guns, massive kabooms.
If he declined Trip's offer, Frank figured he would offend the guy and end up as sorghum or wheat or some other cash crop. If it was the only way to save Hazel, then sure. He could agree to Trip's demands and become a farmer. But that couldn't be the only way. Frank refused to believe he'd been chosen by the fates to go on this quest just so he could take online courses in turnip cultivation. Frank's eyes wandered to the broken chariot.
I have a better offer, he blurted out. I can fix that.
Trip's smile melted.
Fix? My chariot?
Frank wanted to kick himself. What was he thinking? He wasn't Leo. He couldn't even figure out a stupid pair of Chinese handcuffs. He could barely change the batteries in a TV remote. He couldn't fix a magical chariot. But something told him it was his only chance. That chariot was the one thing Triptolemus might really want.
I'll go find a way to fix the chariot, he said. In return, you fix Nico and Hazel. Let us go in peace. And give us whatever aid you can to defeat Gia's forces.
Triptolemus laughed.
What makes you think I can aid you with that?
Hecate told us so, Frank said. She sent us here. She... She decided Hazel is one of her favorites.
The color drained from Tripp's face.
Hecate?
Frank hoped he wasn't overstating things. He didn't need Hecate mad at him, too. But if Triptolemus and Hecate were both friends of Demeter, maybe that would convince Tripp to help.
The goddess guided us to your almanac in Bologna, Frank said. She wanted us to return it to you because, well, she must have known you had some knowledge that would help us get through the House of Hades and Epirus.
Tripp nodded slowly.
Yes, I see. I know why Hecate sent you to me. Very well, son of Mars. Go find a way to fix my chariot. If you succeed, I will do all you ask. If not...
I know, Frank grumbled. My friends die.
Yes, Tripp said cheerfully. And you'll make a lovely patch of sorghum.
Chapter 20. Frank. Frank stumbled out of the black house. The door shut behind him, and he collapsed against the wall, overcome with guilt. Fortunately, the Catoblepines had cleared off, or he might have just sat there and let them trample him. He deserved nothing better. He'd left Hazel inside, dying and defenseless at the mercy of a crazy farmer god.
"Kill farmers!" Ares screamed in his head.
"Return to the Legion and fight Greeks," Mars said.
"What are we doing here?"
"Killing farmers,"
Ares screamed back.
"Shut up,"
Frank yelled aloud.
"Both of you."
A couple of old ladies with shopping bags shuffled past. They gave Frank a strange look, muttered something in Italian, and kept going. Frank stared miserably at Hazel's cavalry sword, lying at his feet next to his backpack. He could run back to the Argo II and get Leo. Maybe Leo could fix the chariot. But Frank somehow knew this wasn't a problem for Leo. It was Frank's task. He had to prove himself. Besides, the chariot wasn't exactly broken. There was no mechanical problem. It was missing a serpent. Frank could turn himself into a python. When he'd woken up that morning as a giant snake, perhaps it had been a sign from the gods. He didn't want to spend the rest of his life turning the wheel of a farmer's chariot, but if it meant saving Hazel... No, there had to be another way. Serpents, Frank thought. Mars. Did his father have some connection to snakes? Mars's sacred animal was the wild boar, not the serpent. Still, Frank was sure he'd heard something once. He could think of only one person to ask. Reluctantly, he opened his mind to the voices of the war god.
"I need a snake," he told them. "How?"
"Ha ha!" Ares screamed. "Yes, the serpent!" "Like that vile Cadmus," Mars said. "We punished him for killing our dragon."
They both started yelling until Frank thought his brain would split in half.
"Okay, stop!"
The voices quieted.
"Cadmus," Frank muttered. "Cadmus."
The story came back to him. The demigod Cadmus had slain a dragon that happened to be a child of Ares. How Ares had ended up with a dragon for a son, Frank didn't want to know. But as punishment for the dragon's death, Ares turned Cadmus into a snake.
"So you can turn your enemies into snakes," Frank said. "That's what I need. I need to find an enemy. Then I need you to turn him into a snake."
"You think I would do that for you?" Ares roared. "You have not proven your worth."
"Only the greatest hero could ask such a boon," Mars said. "A hero like Romulus."
"Too Roman," Ares shouted. "Diomedes."
"Never,"
Mars shouted back.
"That coward fell to Heracles."
"Horatius, then,"
Mars suggested. Ares went silent. Frank sensed a grudging agreement.
Horatius, Frank said. Fine. If that's what it takes, I'll prove I'm as good as Horatius. What did he do?
Images flooded into Frank's mind. He saw a lone warrior standing on a stone bridge, facing an entire army massed on the far side of the Tiber River. Frank remembered the legend. Horatius, the Roman general, had single-handedly held off a horde of invaders, sacrificing himself on that bridge to keep the barbarians from crossing the Tiber. By giving his fellow Romans time to finish their defenses, he'd save the Republic.
Venice is overrun, Mars said, as Rome was about to be. Cleanse it.
Destroy them all, Ares said. Put them to the sword.
Frank pushed the voices to the back of his mind. He looked at his hands and was amazed they weren't trembling. For the first time in days, his thoughts were clear. He knew exactly what he needed to do. He didn't know how he would pull it off. The odds of dying were excellent, but he had to try. Hazel's life depended on him. He strapped Hazel's sword to his belt, morphed his backpack into a quiver and bow, and raced toward the piazza where he'd fought the cow monsters. The plan had three phases: dangerous, really dangerous, and insanely dangerous. Frank stopped at the old stone well. No Cataplepines in sight. He drew Hazel's sword and used it to pry up some cobblestones, unearthing a big tangle of spiky roots. The tendrils unfurled, exuding their stinky green fumes as they crept toward Frank's feet. In the distance, a Cataplepis's foghorn moan filled the air. Others joined in from all different directions. Frank wasn't sure how the monsters could tell he was harvesting their favorite food. Maybe they just had an excellent sense of smell. He had to move fast now. He sliced off a long cluster of vines and laced them through one of his belt loops, trying to ignore the burning and itching in his hands. Soon, he had a glowing, stinking lasso of poisonous weeds. Hooray! The first few Cataplepines lumbered into the piazza, bellowing in anger. Green eyes glowed under their manes. Their long snouts blew clouds of gas, like furry steam engines. Frank knocked an arrow. He had a momentary pang of guilt. These were not the worst monsters he'd met. They were basically grazing animals that happened to be poisonous. Hazel is dying because of them, he reminded himself. He let the arrow fly. The nearest Cataplepis collapsed, crumbling to dust. He knocked a second arrow, but the rest of the herd was almost on top of him. More were charging into the square from the opposite direction. Frank turned into a lion. He roared defiantly and leaped toward the archway, straight over the heads of the second herd. The two groups of Cataplepines slammed into each other, but quickly recovered and ran after him. Frank hadn't been sure the roots would still smell when he changed form. Usually, his clothes and possessions just sort of melted into his animal shape. But apparently, he still smelled like a yummy poison dinner. Each time he raced past a Cataplepis, it roared with outrage and joined the Kill Frank parade. He turned onto a larger street and pushed through the crowds of tourists. What the mortals saw, he had no idea. A cat being chased by a pack of dogs? People cursed at Frank in about 12 different languages. Gelato cones went flying. A woman spilled a stack of carnival masks. One dude toppled into the canal. When Frank glanced back, he had at least 24 monsters on his tail. But he needed more. He needed all the monsters in Venice, and he had to keep the ones behind him enraged. He found an open spot in the crowd and turned back into a human. He drew Hazel's spatha, never his preferred weapon, but he was big enough and strong enough that the heavy cavalry sword didn't bother him. In fact, he was glad for the extra reach. He slashed the golden blade, destroying the first catableps and letting the others bunch up in front of him. He tried to avoid their eyes, but he could feel their gaze burning into him. He figured that if all these monsters breathed on him at once, their combined noxious cloud would be enough to melt him into a puddle. The monsters crowded forward and slammed into one another. Frank yelled,
"You want my poison roots? Come and get them."
He turned into a dolphin and jumped into the canal. He hoped Catableponies couldn't swim. At the very least, they seemed reluctant to follow him in, and he couldn't blame them. The canal was disgusting, smelly and salty, and as warm as soup. But Frank forged through it, dodging gondolas and speedboats, pausing occasionally to chitter dolphin insults at the monsters who followed him on the sidewalks. When he reached the nearest gondola dock, Frank turned back into a human again, stabbed a few more Catableponies to keep them angry, and took off running. So it went. After a while, Frank fell into a kind of daze. He attracted more monsters, scattered more crowds of tourists, and led his now massive following of Catableponies through the winding streets of the old city. Whenever he needed a quick escape, he dove into a canal as a dolphin, or turned into an eagle and soared overhead, but he never got too far ahead of his pursuers. Whenever he felt like the monsters might be losing interest, he stopped on a rooftop and drew his bow, picking off a few of the Catableponies in the center of the herd. He shook his lasso of poison vines and insulted the monsters' bad breath, stirring them into a fury. Then he continued the race. He backtracked. He lost his way. Once he turned a corner and ran into the tail end of his own monster mob. He should have been exhausted, yet somehow he found the strength to keep going, which was good. The hardest part was yet to come. He spotted a couple of bridges, but they didn't look right. One was elevated and completely covered. No way could he get the monsters to funnel through it. Another was too crowded with tourists. Even if the monsters ignored the mortals, that noxious gas couldn't be good for anyone to breathe. The bigger the monster herd got, the more mortals would get pushed aside, knocked into the water, or trampled. Finally, Frank saw something that would work. Just ahead, past a big piazza, a wooden bridge spanned one of the widest canals. The bridge itself was a latticed arc of timber, like an old-fashioned roller coaster, about 50 meters long. From above, in eagle form, Frank saw no monsters on the far side. Every catableps in Venice seemed to have joined the herd and was pushing through the streets behind him as tourists screamed and scattered, maybe thinking they were caught in the midst of a stray dog stampede. The bridge was empty of foot traffic. It was perfect. Frank dropped like a stone and turned back to human form. He ran to the middle of the bridge, a natural choke point, and threw his bait of poisonous roots on the deck behind him. As the front of the catableps herd reached the base of the bridge, Frank drew Hazel's golden spatha.
"Come on," he yelled. "You want to know what Frank Jong is worth? Come on!"
He realized he wasn't just shouting at the monsters. He was venting weeks of fear, rage, and resentment. The voices of Mars and Ares screamed right along with him. The monsters charged. Frank's vision turned red. Later, he couldn't remember the details clearly. He sliced through monsters until he was ankle deep in yellow dust. Whenever he got overwhelmed and the clouds of gas began to choke him, he changed shape, became an elephant, a dragon, a lion. and each transformation seemed to clear his lungs, giving him a fresh burst of energy. His shape-shifting became so fluid he could start an attack in human form with his sword and finish as a lion, raking his claws across a catoblepse's snout. The monsters kicked with their hooves. They breathed noxious gas and glared straight at Frank with their poisonous eyes. He should have died. He should have been trampled. But somehow he stayed on his feet, unharmed, and unleashed a hurricane of violence. He didn't feel any sort of pleasure in this, but he didn't hesitate either. He stabbed one monster and beheaded another. He turned into a dragon and bit a catoblepse in half, then changed into an elephant and trampled three at once under his feet. His vision was still tinted red, and he realized his eyes weren't playing tricks on him. He was actually glowing, surrounded by a rosy aura. He didn't understand why, but he kept fighting until there was only one monster left. Frank faced it with his sword drawn. He was out of breath, sweaty, and caked in monster dust, but he was unharmed. The catoblepse snarled. It must not have been the smartest monster. Despite the fact that several hundred of its brethren had just died, it did not back down.
"Mars!" Frank yelled. "I've proven myself. Now I need a snake."
Frank doubted anyone had ever shouted those words before. It was kind of a weird request. He got no answer from the skies. For once, the voices in his head were silent. The catoblepse lost patience. It launched itself at Frank and left him no choice. He slashed upward. As soon as his blade hit the monster, the catoblepse disappeared in a flash of blood-red light. When Frank's vision cleared, a mottled brown Burmese python was coiled at his feet.
"Well done," said a familiar voice.
Standing a few feet away was his dad, Mars, wearing a red beret and olive fatigues with the insignia of the Italian Special Forces, an assault rifle slung over his shoulder. His face was hard and angular, his eyes covered with dark sunglasses.
"Father?" Frank managed.
He couldn't believe what he'd just done. The terror started to catch up to him. He felt like sobbing, but he guessed that would not be a good idea in front of Mars.
"It's natural to feel fear."
The war god's voice was surprisingly warm, full of pride.
"All great warriors are afraid. Only the stupid and the delusional are not. But you faced your fear, my son. You did what you had to do, like Horatius. This was your bridge, and you defended it."
Frank
wasn't sure what to say.
I just needed a snake.
A tiny smile tugged at Mars's mouth.
"Yes, and now you have one. Your bravery has united my forms, Greek and Roman, if only for a moment. Go, save your friends. But hear me, Frank. Your greatest test is yet to come. When you face the armies of Gia at Epirus, your leadership..."
Suddenly the god doubled over, clutching his head. His form flickered. His fatigues turned into a toga, then a biker's jacket and jeans. His rifle changed into a sword, and then a rocket launcher.
"Agony!"
Mars bellowed.
"Go! Hurry!"
Frank didn't ask questions. Despite his exhaustion, he turned into a giant eagle, snatched up the python in his massive claws, and launched himself into the air. When he glanced back, a miniature mushroom cloud erupted from the middle of the bridge, rings of fire washing outward, and a pair of voices, Mars and Ares, screamed,
"No!"
Frank wasn't sure what had just happened, but he had no time to think about it. He flew over the city, now completely empty of monsters, and headed for the house of Triptolemus.
"You found one!" the farmer god exclaimed. Frank ignored him. He stormed into La Casa Nera, dragging the python by its tail like a very strange Santa Claus bag, and dropped it next to the bed. He knelt at Hazel's side. She was still alive, green and shivering, barely breathing, but alive. As for Nico, he was still a corn plant.
"Heal them," Frank said. "Now."
Triptolemus crossed his arms.
"How do I know the snake will work?"
Frank gritted his teeth. Since the explosion on the bridge, the voices of the war god had gone silent in his head, but he still felt their combined anger churning inside him. He felt physically different, too. Had Triptolemus gotten shorter?
"The snake is a gift from Mars," Frank growled. "It will work."
As if on cue, the Burmese python slithered over to the chariot and wrapped itself around the right wheel. The other snake woke up. The two serpents checked each other out, touching noses, then turned their wheels in unison. The chariot inched forward, its wings flapping.
"You see?"
Frank said.
"Now, heal my friends."
Triptolemus tapped his chin.
"Well, thank you for the snake, but I'm not sure I like your tone, demigod. Perhaps I'll turn you into..."
Frank was faster. He lunged at Trip and slammed him into the wall, his fingers locked around the god's throat.
"Think about your next words," Frank warned, deadly calm. "Or instead of beating my sword into a plowshare, I will beat it into your head."
Triptolemus gulped.
"You know, I think I'll heal your friends."
"Swear it on the river Styx."
"I swear it on the river Styx."
Frank released him. Triptolemus touched his throat, as if making sure it was still there. He gave Frank a nervous smile, edged around him, and scurried off to the front room.
Just gathering herbs."
Frank watched as the god picked leaves and roots and crushed them in a mortar. He rolled a pill-sized ball of green goop and jogged to Hazel's side. He placed the gunk ball under Hazel's tongue. Instantly, she shuddered and sat up, coughing. Her eyes flew open. The greenish tint in her skin disappeared. She looked around, bewildered, until she saw Frank.
"What?"
Frank tackled her in a hug.
"You're going to be fine," he said fiercely. "Everything is fine."
"But..."
Hazel gripped his shoulders and stared at him in amazement.
"Frank, what happened to you?"
"To me?"
He stood, suddenly self-conscious.
"I don't..."
He looked down and realized what she meant. Triptolemus hadn't gotten shorter. Frank was taller. His gut had shrunk. His chest seemed bulkier. Frank had had growth spurts before. Once he'd woken up 2 centimeters taller than when he'd gone to sleep. But this was nuts. It was as if some of the dragon and lion had stayed with him when he'd turned back to human.
I don't... Maybe I can fix it."
Hazel laughed with delight.
"Why? You look amazing."
I do?
"I mean, you were handsome before, but you look older and taller and so distinguished."
Triptolemus heaved a dramatic sigh. "Yes, obviously some sort of blessing from Mars. Congratulations, blah, blah, blah. Now, if we're done here..." Frank glared at him.
"We're not done. Heal Nico."
The farm god rolled his eyes. He pointed at the corn plant, and bam! Nico D'Angelo appeared in an explosion of corn silk. Nico looked around in a panic.
I had the weirdest nightmare about popcorn.
He frowned at Frank.
Why are you taller?
Everything's fine, Frank promised. Triptolemus was about to tell us how to survive the House of Hades. Weren't you, Trip?
The farm god raised his eyes to the ceiling like, why me, Demeter?
Fine, Trip said.
When you arrive at Epirus, you will be offered a chalice to drink from.
Offered by whom? Nico asked.
Doesn't matter, Trip snapped. Just know that it is filled with deadly poison. Hazel shuddered.
So you're saying that we shouldn't drink it?
No, Trip said. You must drink it, or you'll never be able to make it through the temple. The poison connects you to the world of the dead, lets you pass into the lower levels. The secret to surviving is...
His eyes twinkled.
Barley.
Frank stared at him. Barley.
In the front room, take some of my special barley. Make it into little cakes. Eat these before you step into the House of Hades. The barley will absorb the worst of the poison, so it will affect you, but not kill you.
That's it? Nico demanded.
Hecate sent us halfway across Italy so you could tell us to eat barley?
Good luck. Triptolemus sprinted across the room and hopped in his chariot. And, Frank Jong, I forgive you. You got spunk. If you ever change your mind, my offer is open. I'd love to see you get a degree in farming.
Yeah, Frank muttered. Thanks. The god pulled a lever on his chariot.
The snake wheels turned. The wings flapped. At the back of the room, the garage doors rolled open.
Oh, to be mobile again, Trip cried. So many ignorant lands in need of my knowledge. I will teach them the glories of tilling, irrigation, fertilizing.
The chariot lifted off and zipped out of the house, Triptolemus shouting to the sky.
Away, my serpents! Away!
That, Hazel said, was very strange.
The glories of fertilizing.
Nico brushed some corn silk off his shoulder.
Can we get out of here now?
Hazel put her hand on Frank's shoulder.
Are you okay, really? You bartered for our lives. What did Triptolemus make you do?
Frank tried to hold it together. He scolded himself for feeling so weak. He could face an army of monsters, but as soon as Hazel showed him kindness, he wanted to break down and cry.
Those cow monsters, the cataplepines that poisoned you, I had to destroy them.
That was brave, Nico said. There must have been, what, 6 or 7 left in that herd?
No. Frank cleared his throat. All of them. I killed all of them in the city.
Nico and Hazel stared at him in stunned silence. Frank was afraid they might doubt him or start to laugh. How many monsters had he killed on that bridge? 200? 300? But he saw in their eyes that they believed him. They were children of the underworld. Maybe they could sense the death and carnage he'd waded through. Hazel kissed his cheek. She had to stand on her tiptoes to do it now. Her eyes were incredibly sad, as if she realized something had changed in Frank, something much more important than the physical growth spurt. Frank knew it too. He would never be the same. He just wasn't sure if that was a good thing.
Well, Nico said, breaking the tension, does anyone know what barley looks like?
Chapter 21. Annabeth. Annabeth decided the monsters wouldn't kill her. Neither would the poisonous atmosphere, nor the treacherous landscape, with its pits, cliffs, and jagged rocks. Nope. Most likely she would die from an overload of weirdness that would make her brain explode. First, she and Percy had had to drink fire to stay alive. Then, they were attacked by a gaggle of vampires led by a cheerleader Annabeth had killed 2 years ago. Finally, they were rescued by a Titan janitor named Bob, who had Einstein hair, silver eyes, and wicked broom skills. Sure, why not? They followed Bob through the wasteland, tracing the route of the Phlegathon as they approached the storm front of darkness. Every so often, they stopped to drink fire water, which kept them alive, but Annabeth wasn't happy about it. Her throat felt like she was constantly gargling with battery acid. Her only comfort was Percy. Every so often, he would glance over and smile, or squeeze her hand. He had to be just as scared and miserable as she was, and she loved him for trying to make her feel better. "Bob knows what he's doing," Percy promised. "You have interesting friends," Annabeth murmured.
"Bob is interesting."
The Titan turned and grinned.
"Yes, thank you."
The big guy had good ears. Annabeth would have to remember that.
"So, Bob?"
She tried to sound casual and friendly, which wasn't easy with a throat scorched by firewater.
"How did you get to Tartarus?" "I jumped," he said, like it was obvious. "You jumped into Tartarus?" she said. "Because Percy said your name?" "He needed me."
Those silver eyes gleamed in the darkness.
"It is okay. I was tired of sweeping the palace. Come along. We are almost at a rest stop."
A rest stop? Annabeth couldn't imagine what those words meant in Tartarus. She remembered all the times she, Luke, and Thalia had relied on highway rest stops when they were homeless demigods trying to survive. Wherever Bob was taking them, she hoped it had clean restrooms and a snack machine. She repressed the giggles. Yes, she was definitely losing it. Annabeth hobbled along, trying to ignore the rumble in her stomach. She stared at Bob's back as he led them toward the wall of darkness, now only a few hundred yards away. His blue janitor's coveralls were ripped between the shoulder blades, as if someone had tried to stab him. Cleaning rags stuck out of his pocket. A squirt bottle swung from his belt, the blue liquid inside sloshing hypnotically. Annabeth remembered Percy's story about meeting the Titan. Thalia Grace, Nico D'Angelo, and Percy had worked together to defeat Bob on the banks of the Lethe. After wiping his memory, they didn't have the heart to kill him. He became so gentle and sweet and cooperative that they left him at the Palace of Hades, where Persephone promised he would be looked after. Apparently, the underworld king and queen thought looking after someone meant giving him a broom and having him sweep up their messes. Annabeth wondered how even Hades could be so callous. She'd never felt sorry for a Titan before, but it didn't seem right taking a brainwashed immortal and turning him into an unpaid janitor. "He's not your friend," she reminded herself. She was terrified that Bob would suddenly remember himself. Tartarus was where monsters came to regenerate. What if it healed his memory? If he became Iapetus again, well, Annabeth had seen the way he had dealt with those Empusai. Annabeth had no weapon. She and Percy were in no condition to fight a Titan. She glanced nervously at Bob's broom handle, wondering how long it would be before that hidden spearhead jutted out and got pointed at her. Following Bob through Tartarus was a crazy risk. Unfortunately, she couldn't think of a better plan. They picked their way across the ashen wasteland as red lightning flashed overhead in the poisonous clouds. just another lovely day in the dungeon of creation. Annabeth couldn't see far in the hazy air, but the longer they walked, the more certain she became that the entire landscape was a downward curve. She'd heard conflicting descriptions of Tartarus. It was a bottomless pit. It was a fortress surrounded by brass walls. It was nothing but an endless void. One story described it as the inverse of the sky, a huge, hollow, upside-down dome of rock. That seemed the most accurate, though if Tartarus was a dome, Annabeth guessed it was like the sky, with no real bottom but made of multiple layers, each one darker and less hospitable than the last. And even that wasn't the full horrible truth. They passed a blister in the ground, a writhing, translucent bubble the size of a minivan. Curled inside was the half-formed body of a draken. Bob speared the blister without a second thought. It burst in a geyser of steaming yellow slime, and the draken dissolved into nothing. Bob kept walking. Monsters are zits on the skin of Tartarus, Annabeth thought. She shuddered. Sometimes she wished she didn't have such a good imagination, because now she was certain they were walking across a living thing. This whole twisted landscape, the dome, pit, or whatever you called it, was the body of the god Tartarus, the most ancient incarnation of evil. Just as Gia inhabited the surface of the earth, Tartarus inhabited the pit. If that god noticed them walking across his skin like fleas on a dog, enough. No more thinking.
Here,
Bob said. They stopped at the top of a ridge. Below them, in a sheltered depression like a moon crater, stood a ring of broken black marble columns surrounding a dark stone altar.
Hermes's shrine,
Bob explained. Percy frowned. A Hermes shrine in Tartarus? Bob laughed in delight.
Yes, it fell from somewhere long ago. Maybe Mortal World, maybe Olympus. Anyway, monsters steer clear, mostly.
How did you know it was here? Annabeth asked. Bob's smile faded. He got a vacant look in his eyes.
Can't remember.
That's okay, Percy said quickly.
Annabeth felt like kicking herself. Before Bob became Bob, he had been Iapetus, the Titan. Like all his brethren, he'd been imprisoned in Tartarus for eons. Of course he knew his way around. If he remembered this shrine, he might start recalling other details of his old prison and his old life. That would not be good. They climbed into the crater and entered the circle of columns. Annabeth collapsed on a broken slab of marble, too exhausted to take another step. Percy stood over her protectively, scanning their surroundings. The inky storm front was less than 100 feet away now, obscuring everything ahead of them. The crater's rim blocked their view of the wasteland behind. They'd be well hidden here, but if monsters did stumble across them, they would have no warning.
You said someone was chasing us, Annabeth said. Who?
Bob swept his broom around the base of the altar, occasionally crouching to study the ground, as if looking for something.
They are following, yes. They know you are here. Giants and titans, the defeated ones. They know.
The defeated ones. Annabeth tried to control her fear. How many titans and giants had she and Percy fought over the years? Each one had seemed like an impossible challenge. If all of them were down here in Tartarus, and if they were actively hunting Percy and Annabeth?
Why are we stopping then? She said. We should keep moving.
Soon, Bob said. But mortals need rest. Good place here. Best place for
Oh, long, long way. I will guard you.
Annabeth glanced at Percy, sending him the silent message, no. Hanging out with a Titan was bad enough. Going to sleep while the Titan guarded you? She didn't need to be a daughter of Athena to know that was 100% unwise.
You sleep, Percy told her. I'll keep the first watch with Bob.
Bob rumbled in agreement.
Yes, good. When you wake, food should be here.
Annabeth's stomach did a rollover at the mention of food. She didn't see how Bob could summon food in the midst of Tartarus. Maybe he was a caterer as well as a janitor. She didn't want to sleep, but her body betrayed her. Her eyelids turned to lead.
Percy, wake me for second watch. Don't be a hero.
He gave her that smirk she'd come to love.
Who, me?
He kissed her, his lips parched and feverishly warm.
Sleep.
Annabeth felt like she was back in the hypnos cabin at Camp Half-Blood, overcome with drowsiness. She curled up on the hard ground and closed her eyes. Chapter 22. Annabeth. Later, she made a resolution. Never, ever sleep in Tartarus. Demigod dreams were always bad. Even in the safety of her bunk at camp, she'd had horrible nightmares. In Tartarus, they were 1,000 times more vivid. First, she was a little girl again, struggling to climb Half-Blood Hill. Luke Castellon held her hand, pulling her along. Their satyr guide, Grover Underwood, pranced nervously at the summit, yelling, "Hurry! Hurry!" Thalia Grace stood behind them, holding back an army of hellhounds with her terror-invoking shield, Aegis. From the top of the hill, Annabeth could see the camp in the valley below, the warm lights of the cabins, the possibility of sanctuary. She stumbled, twisting her ankle, and Luke scooped her up to carry her. When they looked back, the monsters were only a few yards away, dozens of them surrounding Thalia.
Go! Thalia yelled. I'll hold them off!
She brandished her spear, and forked lightning slashed through the monsters' ranks, but as the hellhounds fell, more took their place.
We have to run! Grover cried.
He led the way into camp. Luke followed, with Annabeth crying, beating at his chest, and screaming that they couldn't leave Thalia alone. But it was too late. The scene shifted. Annabeth was older, climbing to the summit of Half-Blood Hill. Where Thalia had made her last stand, a tall pine tree now rose. Overhead, a storm was raging. Thunder shook the valley. A blast of lightning split the tree down to its roots, opening a smoking crevice. In the darkness below stood Rhaena, the praetor of New Rome. Her cloak was the color of blood fresh from a vein. Her gold armor glinted. She stared up, her face regal and distant, and spoke directly into Annabeth's mind.
You have done well, Rhaena said,
but the voice was Athena's.
The rest of my journey must be on the wings of Rome.
The praetor's dark eyes turned as gray as storm clouds.
I must stand here, Rhaena told her. The Roman must bring me.
The hill shook. The ground rippled as the grass became folds of silk, the dress of a massive goddess. Gia rose over Camp Half-Blood, her sleeping face as large as a mountain. Hellhounds poured over the hills. Giants, six-armed earthborn, and wild cyclopes charged from the beach, tearing down the dining pavilion, setting fire to the cabins and the big house.
Hurry, said the voice of Athena. The message must be sent.
The ground split at Annabeth's feet, and she fell into darkness. Her eyes flew open. She cried out, grasping Percy's arms. she was still in Tartarus, at the shrine of Hermes.
It's okay, Percy promised. Bad dreams